Welcome to Ram Radio with Pastor John Coleman of Into the Word Ministries, the Biblical Alternative. Ram Radio stands for Reformation Apologetics Ministry. Ram Radio is a program for the Christian who is constantly learning and growing in the Word of God. The discussions during Ram Radio will challenge each listener to know what they believe and why they believe it. Sometimes the discussions will challenge your salvation. Stay with us and investigate the scriptures to know what is expected of the man or woman who claims Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. Get your Bible ready. Here's Pastor John Coleman.
Thank you, Mark Ramsey, on this August the 6th, 2013, in Los Angeles, California, the United States of America, live from the Lucy Coleman Studio. This is Ram Radio, which is the Biblical Alternative. PJ, your internet pastor, talking about things that needs to be discussed, the parent trap. Are you a parent of a child? Do your children look like the picture that's on the screen of my website? Do they listen to that music? Does their behavior seem to be erratic? We're going to have this discussion and much more when we address the situation. But my child is what it is because of the trap that I put it in. Are you saying no parent could really see that? Stay tuned for the Biblical Alternative for the next hour. I'm your internet host, PJ, Pastor John. And I hope that you guys are having a great week. And I am. As a matter of fact, tomorrow we're going to have the final exams in the college. And as we have that final exam coming up, it means that you students that are taking my philosophy class need to really put forth some effort, because I'm going to finish putting that test together today, and then I'm going to end up this semester and try to have something that is symbolizing a vacation. Hey, listen, I want to address your attention to a biblical verse, Jeremiah chapter 31, starting with verse 29. Chapter 31, verses 29 and 30. I want to read them. In those days, they will not say again, the fathers have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge. But everyone will die for his own iniquity. Each man who eats the sour grapes, his teeth will be set on edge. Now, for years, I've been trying to share with you that the moral decay of our society has fallen off of the wagon, that we're looking at proportions of a no return epidemic. But I was listening to something on the radio last night coming in from school. As a matter of fact, I was listening to NPR radio, and I was listening to the new head of the Catholic Church over the Archdiocese here in Los Angeles. I forget his name. Gomez, I think his name is. I'm not sure. But he is the head prelate over the Catholic Church in the country. And he was on NPR News, and they were asking him a question about the immigration laws that are beginning to take effect in this country, or the discussions that they're having about it. He made a very interesting statement, and it struck me as interesting, and I'd like to share this as we think about our children. He says that the reason that a lot of people are coming to this country from across the borders is for their families, sustaining the life of their families. Now, as an African American, I'm looking very close at my community. I mean, very close at my community. And when you look at the Hispanic community, whether they be from Guatemala, whether they're from Mexico, whatever country they're from, that's why most of my Bible study students in my class are Hispanic, as opposed to the blacks that used to come to my home Bible studies. Now, that in and of itself is a phenomenon, and I want my Bible study students that's been listening to me to know that I'm going to start up the Bible study in my home again at the end of August, because I need at least, after summer school, 2 weeks vacation just for me. I just want to stop work, and I just want to relax. I want to go out with my friends. I want to enjoy a summer vacation, a break from teaching everything. I had to work this summer because I need money to survive. But I'm looking at the black community as a whole and comparing it with the inner city community of the Hispanic community. The Hispanic community, family-wise, is thriving. Now, let me tell you what the government has done. Ramey, if you're listening to me in Maryland, you know this is true. Curtis, if you're listening to me in Virginia, you know this is true. Any of you guys on their mailing list, you know this is true. Any of you conservatives, black conservatives, know that this is true. The average father, the average young father that fathers a child is not living with the mother nor the child. The child is going to grow up. They're going to look like those two nitwits that I have as a picture on my website, because if they keep listening to that music without parental guidance and parental instruction, your children will come up looking and sounding like that. Now, that's ridiculous. A lot of people think that it's a lot of fun, that it's party time, and it's, oh, John, you just a spoil sport. Wait, I have young men around me all the time, young people around me. I hang with young people, but I hang with various types of young people. Some young people got their head squared on their shoulder, right? And they know that they have to buckle down and make their life happen to them. And then you have the other young person that is disillusioned. Something has happened to them. And this is what I found to be true. In the black community, the black man has been ostracized, put out of the family. Number one, he can't find employment. Now, when he comes around the woman, what he wants to do is he wants to sleep with her. Once he sleeps with her, he gives her another illegitimate child. And what I mean by illegitimate is not that it's not his child. It is his child. But he can't provide for the child. He can't provide guidance to the child. What if he's never had guidance? What is he doing making a baby and he doesn't know how to raise a baby? What is she doing having a baby and she doesn't know how to raise that baby? What if she's a baby in her mind? It's a disaster waiting to take place. Now, we have to put the blame squarely where it belongs. And it's on that parent. You know, often I tell a young man, I says, before you lie down to even have coitus with a woman, you have to think about the possibility of that sperm attaching itself to that egg and making a human being. Now, let's read the verses again. In those days, they will not say again, the father has eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge, but everyone will die for his own iniquity. That's where we are today. Each man who eats the sour grapes, his teeth will be set on edge. Now we see our children's teeth set on edge because of the situation that has happened. God vowed to provide a new beginning for his covenant people. That's what these verses are all about. When you look at Jeremiah chapter 31, verses 27 through 30. In this new age, God will plant the nations of Israel and Judah with the offspring of men and animals. Jeremiah, again, used agricultural metaphors to illustrate God's works. All right, God had judged Judah for her sin, but he will reverse that judgment. In other words, God's work for the nation will silence a proverb that was common in Jeremiah's day. Those facing judgment in Jeremiah's day felt that they were being unfairly punished by God for their ancestors' sins. For the fathers had eaten the sour grapes, and it was the children who experienced the effects of having their teeth set on edge. Now, one used to could say something like that, but no, now it's the children have done that. This proverb was false because it implied that God was unrighteous, that God's justice will guarantee that each guilty person will die for his own sin. This is where we're faced today in this nation. We're faced today in this nation. As parents, we have to look back at our children. I have to look back at mine. I have to look at my grandchildren. I don't necessarily like the way my grandchildren are being raised by their parents. I don't like it at all, but I can't do anything about that because those aren't my children. They're my grandchildren. The only thing that I can do is to share with my children or with anyone, you know, you're ruining the child. The child is growing up without these these moral attributes. Now, let me switch tracks again and give you something else, because I read the second essay and turned it into my philosophy class last night, and I shared with them that I was very well pleased, because in the second essay, they were supposed to choose one particular subject matter in the philosophy class that touched them out of the entire summer class, and to write a very professional-looking philosophical essay to address those particular issues. And as they addressed those particular issues, I found it surprisingly, and I was amazed at how real they were. One of my students, Jason is his first name, wrote just an excellent paper on simple subjectivism, and his argument on simple subjectivism would defeat any evangelical Christian's idea towards any moral or immoral standard. I also have a very astute Christian in my class, and he got about 280 on his paper. And the reason that he didn't get a straight 300 on his paper, and I told him what he did wrong. He started off his paper with a Bible verse. I tried to share with the student at the beginning of the semester that this wasn't a theology class, that this is a philosophy class. And then I did not want his Bible to guide the understanding of the philosophical processes. I wanted to see the philosophical processes at work. He wrote an excellent paper, but when he put that Bible in there, that he distorted what the meaning of the paper was saying. Now, why did I say that? Listen to me very close. God has specific rules and instructions that he gives parents. And when these parents follow these specific rules and instructions, and they lie down on the bed, and if she's a woman and she opens her legs, and I'm not trying to be gross because this is a Christian website, and when that man penetrates that woman, and during the process of lovemaking, be it as it is, some of you may look at that as a very gross thing. It's not gross. It's a wonderful thing when a person loves another person, and from that lovemaking comes the child. Child has the DNA of both parents, looks like both parents, develops the personality of both parents, does all those things. Now, when that parent is instrumental in raising that child and giving that child proper guidance and instruction, that child will not come up looking like those two nitwits that you see as a picture on my website. Now, I'm not going to, get into this on casting the blame on anyone, because it's too late. Our country has gone through the wildest metamorphosis that I've ever seen in my entire life. The church is impotent. The church can't reverse the processes. They can't do anything. I had a student contact me, I think from the year 2005. He said that he took me in philosophy in the year 2005, and I presented to him a text, and the name of the text is called Prayers for the Assassin. It's a book written by Robert Ferrigno. And if you recall, when I put a picture of this map of the United States up on my website, it caused some trepidation with a lot of people, because what it showed about how the Islamic Republic will move in this nation and take over the nation, and our major cities will be taken down because of attacks and whatnot. And then it has a section called the Bible Belt. Top North, St. Louis, Dallas, Atlanta, Georgia. I don't know about Atlanta, because Atlanta, Georgia is the African-American gay capital of the universe. In Atlanta, Georgia, you have per capita more males that are gay. And I'm talking about raunchy gay. I'm talking about transvestite, tweak types, having sex with. Man, this thing is crazy. They all move there. Atlanta used to be a beautiful southern city, something like Charleston, when you would go into that beautiful city and see things. Well, Atlanta now is gone. And listen, I don't have anything against gay people. Go ahead. But I'm talking about the AIDS epidemic. I mean, when people are having so much sex with other people and they're not using protection, and you have AIDS. All right, now here it is. Stats, true stats. Wait, I had a website up, but I'll just try to remember it off the top of my head. The average male goes to prison at what age? 21, 22? 21, 22 years old. The average black male, that's when he goes to jail. And usually it's on a misdemeanor. Or it's some violent crime. Or, you know, robbery or something. You know, trying to live. They go to jail. Now, I've never been to jail. You guys know that. I've never been to jail. I was in the military stockade when I was in the military. And I was just peeling potatoes and serving strawberry shortcake to the prisoners. So I didn't go to jail because of any a pertinent crime that I did in my environment. So you have the average guy going to jail at 21. He spends average 3 years. But now here in California, they're going to cut them all out of jail because the jail system has run out of money. Now, these guys go to jail for 3 or 4 years. When they get out of jail, check this out. Look at the stats. They have felonies against them. Some of them have one strike, two strike, and three strikes, buddy, you're out. You never get out of the system. If you can't drive a car because you can't get a license, if you can't get a cell phone to check out a job, if your parents have gotten rid of you because they raised a little Wayne or a little Kim and put them out, if you have no skills to compete in this society, well, you got to have skills. You have to have communicative skills. You have to know how to deal with business. You have to know how to dress. And our youngsters today, I'm not against tattoos because some of my best friends that are Christians have tattoos. I'm not against that. But they have so many tattoos on their body. And when you go and work in the world of business, I'm going to tell you, nobody wants to see somebody sitting out in front of them looking like a kung fu fighter with all kind of advertisements on their body. It's not going to work in the business world. It's not going to work. And as long as we live in a country that has a budget, a society, moral rules, they are not going to have that. Who's telling our young people that? As a matter of fact, I would dare to venture to say this. And what I like to do is I like to walk around my house with my shirt off. And I hang around a lot of young cats, you know? And they don't see no tattoos on my body. My body is purely clean. I'm at the top. I have none of that. It's not like that with these youngsters. I'm not holding it against them because that's a deal. But when they get out there to get a job and a guy says, well, yeah, I'd like you to do that. Take off your shirt. What are they looking at? See, what I'm saying that when you make a decision to do something when you're a young person and then you get older and you don't know how that's going to cause you to look when you get older, that's going to affect your future. That's what you have a parent for. That's why a parent should tell a girl you shouldn't look the way you look because you're going to make a young boy look at you in that way and have the wrong idea about you, especially if you're raising a little girl. You know, you want her to be sweet. You want her to be chaste. When I raised my daughters, I told them, you don't want to get too close to these boys because these boys are horny. For those of you parents that don't know what horny is, it means that they're bulging. I'm just telling you like it is, and they want to poke these girls. These little raccoons, they're you guys know I'm telling the truth. As a pastor, I'm not going to play. You know, what is your pastor telling you in church when you go there? What are they telling you? These boys are bulging. They're going to keep on bulging. I know because I have them around me all the time. That's all they think about. That's all they're doing. Now, what does God say about that? And God says, be sure your sin will find you out. Wait a minute. Let's look at this verse and see what this is saying. When I look at this, it says, in those days, they shall say no more, the fathers have eaten the sour grape and the children's teeth are set on edge. Now, you have to understand that the wicked use this proverb when they murmured against God's judgments pronounced by the prophets. See, the preachers in the old days gave this rendering to the people, and the people were supposed to listen to that rendering. It comes from the Ezekiel 18, 2 and 3 text, which says, what mean ye that ye use this proverb, okay, concerning the Lord of Israel, saying the fathers have eaten sour grapes? In other words, they're saying, what did he mean by that? But look at verse 30. It says, but everyone shall die in his own sin, each man who have eaten the sour grapes, his teeth shall be set on edge. Now, when you look at the comparison scriptures on that, look at the New Testament scripture, Galatians chapter 6, verses 5 and 7. It says, "For each man will bear his own load." That's what a parent is to tell his child. The parent has to tell his child, when you grow up, you're going to have to bear your own load. The next verse, "Let him who is taught the word share all good things with him who teaches." Okay, in other words, if the preacher tells you something good about how to live, that's why you give a little money sometime to the church, because the preacher's telling you something to expand your child's life, not to have the child's, wait a minute, look at James 1:15. It says, then desire, when it is conceived, give birth to sin. See, what is it? I want to be like the other kids. I want to be cool. I'm going to tell you what cool is. This is what you do. When you got an 18-year-old dude getting out of high school, he said, "All right, son, you're getting out of high school. You can't look at the NBA. Cannot look at the NFL. You cannot look to become a Tiger Woods. Let me mention all these things that you cannot mention to your kids. You can't be looking at 2 and 3 mansions and all this stuff. You can't be looking at the rap singers because you got to get filthy to do that. You got to get, man, do you know how many, did you know that Kanye West, let me say this right now. Kanye had a problem when his mama died. Now, whose fault was that? It was his mama for being arrogant, trying to get her face or whatever it was, and it was for him because he listened to her. If Kanye was a man, he would have said, "Mama, we need to invest what this is going to do to you, because you look good to me wherever you go." But now she wanted to look like Hollywood. Ever since that boy's mama died, his music has gotten crazier and crazier, and he is irrelevant. As I heard one radio commentator say, Kanye is irrelevant, and anybody that listens to anything like that is irrelevant. I don't care who he's going with, whose baby he got. Now, wait a minute. Let me pick on another one, because, see, I can pick on mine, too, because in my day, the guy's name was Sam Cooke. Do you remember Sam Cooke? Sam Cooke was 23, 24 years old when he died, something like that. He had more hit records than anybody. He was down on Figueroa in a motel having sex with a Korean prostitute, butt naked, when he looked up and the hoe had taken his wallet and tried to run out the the thing with all of his money. Sam, butt naked, drunk, went into the manager's office, whom he knew, and saying, "Where is that Korean whore?" And the manager shot Sam Cooke to death. Be sure your sin will find you out. You will get shot to death following a hoe. Now, you know what I be trying to tell young men? Bro, man, get out of here before you get hit. Get out. Now, that's one example. Now, the example that we have today is one of the greatest rappers that I ever heard sing in my life. I liked his music when he took some modern music in Tupac Shakur. He was one of the... Man, wait a minute. As a matter of fact, I'm going to share something with you. Hold on 1 second. Just going to take a second. Now, you may say, Tupac Shakur, Pastor John, have you lost your mind? I'm reading from a text because some people compiled his works. It's called The Rose That Grew in the Concrete. And you may not believe this, but these are the words of Tupac Shakur. And the poem is called Sometimes I Cry. Sometimes when I'm alone, I cry because I'm on my own. The tears I cry are bitter and warm. They flow with life to take no form. I cry because my heart is torn and I find it difficult to carry on. If I had an ear to confide in, I would cry amongst my treasured friends. But who do you know that stops that long to help another carry on? The world moves fast and it would rather pass you by than to stop and see what makes you cry. It's painful and sad, and sometimes I cry, and no one cares about why. Now, I'm touched by this poem because of something that took place right when I paused to go get the book. I had one young man that's in my home says, I have to run down the street. because my best friend is cracking up. He's throwing things around. He doesn't know what to do. And the young man told me, not the one that just left my home, but the one that he's going to see, that he doesn't cry. Because this generation, when their parents screw up in their lives, and I mean screw up royally, they don't cry. They explode. And I can't have any explosions around me. And you know, it is shameful what some of these parents have done to these children. Let me go back to my scenario when I share with you again the predicament of black society in America. And I'm not casting the blame on anybody. I'm just telling you the morbid, putrid results of a situation going bad when parents don't do what they're supposed to do. Even when you have a child, when you ought not have it. You know, it's so often, I mean, I taught over the years when I was behind the pulpit, don't lie down with someone that is going to be a detriment to your existence. I would rather have someone just have a boyfriend or a girlfriend, all right? A date. And not to get that intimate at all. Have someone that you can confide in, someone that is closer to you in some of the things in life, but not. Okay. And it's interesting because when you think about the end of Tupac's life, because on the back cover of the book, it has a poem that he wrote called In the Event of My Demise. Okay. To those curious, he says, dedicated to those curious. This is what Tupac wrote prior to his death. He is long dead and a very talented young man, very talented. And I might say very bright looking, very, very handsome, very articulate. He had everything on the ball for him, everything. You may not like the style of music, but you have to understand the core belief system that he came up in. I, as a pastor, as a philosopher, I understand that. He says, in the event of my demise, when my heart can beat no more, I hope I die for a principle or a belief that I had, that I lived for. I will die before my time because I feel the shadow's depth so much I wanted to accomplish before I reach my death. I have come to grips with the possibility and wiped the last year from my eyes. I loved all who were positive in the event of my demise. Wow. From Tupac Shakur, who died at 25. When I hear his music, whenever I'm listening to their music station, and I hear it, I pause because the life is gone. And you know, God only gives you one to live. Only one. One life to live. I was telling a young man when I got in from school last night, he was skateboarding in front of the house, and he knows me. And his friend was over here, and I invited him in. And I said, your life is coming to crisis, because a person in your family is dying. And when that person dies, you're going to be basically left on your own. And I said, it is time for you at 22, 23 to discover what the hell it is you're going to do with your life. And I said, and you cannot respond. But you know what? I'm going to tell you what his response was. Look what they did to me. Speaking about his parents. Look what they did to me. Same thing that Morio Canto said when he was here. Morio Canto would fall out crying. I never had anybody like you in my life when I was young. I thought that everybody grew up like this, that this madness, that, listen, you know what? The only thing that can turn this situation around for anyone is a belief system that governs your lives, a belief system that is categorically working. I just don't understand why we don't see that. And I think here's another poem. Man, this book is just filled with great poetry by this young man who died before his time. And here's the inevitable question that I like to end up this webcast with. Do you see the generation that lives before us dying before their time? Because when I was 21, 22 years old, I was thinking about what I would be like when I'm 40 and 50 years old. When I was 21 and 22 years old, I was of the mindset that my whole life was a futuristic plan that I had set in motion. Let me go back way back to the first time. And I think that we have to do this sometimes. And I think that if any of you sitting up there are over 40 years old and you got children, you need to speak with your children like this. Now, I got the marriage page, but I don't have a youth page up. Maybe I should do that one of these days as God gives me longevity. But I'm not going to take my 10 days vacation to do that, because I would take 10 days making this youth page, just speaking freelance, to give you some kind of an indication of how we should guide our youth. What you should do is sit down and ask them some questions. Number one, what are your plans for the future? When they say, what do you mean? You have to say, what are the plans for your future 15 years from now? What? Well, this is 2013, right? 2023, 24, 25, 26, 20. What are your plans by the year 2028? They're going to say, what? What are your plans? What will you be doing in 2028? Now, this is very realistic because I had two daughters that I raised, and those are the conversations that we had around the kitchen table when we had dinner. Now, when you look at that picture on my website, surely my children's plans were not to look like that. Because I'm telling you that back in the day when I asked my children that question would not be the picture that I had in my mind. I would rather them, if they were boys, to have on a business suit or a nice sports outfit. I don't mind wearing the Chicago Cubs hat. I don't understand the jeans a boy got on. He looked like he got on tight jeans for a woman. Not 15 years from now. When you ask your child that question, then the secondary question that you have to ask as a parent is, what are you doing to procure the answer of that child? Because as a parent, God has given you the, God has given you the challenge to set up something for that to take place for that child. Now, if you're any kind of a parent that loves a human being, what is it called? Let me grab this other book. Hold on. Okay. I'm looking for it because we were talking about it. We were talking about it, and I don't. Ah, yes, it's Kant's Respect of Persons. Let me take you to this, and let me read this to you. Listen to this, and then you'll understand what I mean. Immanuel Kant thought that human beings occupy a special place in creation. Of course, he was not alone in thinking this. From the ancient times, people have considered themselves to be essentially different from all other creatures. So human beings are different from dogs and cats and birds and fleas and squirrels. Okay, and not just different, but better, B-E-T-T-E-R. Then he says, in fact, humans have traditionally thought themselves to be quite fabulous. Kant certainly did. On his view, human beings have an intrinsic worth or dignity that makes them valuable above all price. Now, you take a parent that doesn't see that baby as being valuable above all price, then it is called the parent trap. The parent has trapped the child into the twilight zone. And when they come out of the twilight zone, they look like a picture of these two individuals right there. They're supposed to be midgets, fidgets. I don't know who it is. If that is Lil Wayne in baby form, shame on him. And if that other one is Lil Kim, whoever that is, shame on her. The brains have been confused by inappropriate language, by a lifestyle. I know if these people probably had me in a room, they probably beat the snot out of me. But that's not going to change. I know what decency is, and I know what indecency is. They would probably say, who in the Hades is Immanuel Kant? Well, he was talking about respect of persons. Yes. Two facts about people on Kant's view support this judgment. He says, first, because people have desires, things that justify those desires can have value for people. By contrast, mere things have value only insofar as they promote human ends. In other words, it promotes the human end. I kill the chicken, I fry the chicken, I eat the chicken because the end of that chicken is towards my end. You don't see chickens frying humans eating them. Not yet. Not yet, I say. Not yet. So, since we as humans are higher than animals, it is expected that the parent of that human has a higher degree of paying attention to what happens with that human. Because when they don't pay attention, the human turns out corrupt. That's why our prisons are full of young black men and Hispanic men and white men, too. That, as a matter of fact, I had one of my female students in the class told me. She said she was in prison a number of years. And I said, what? And she said, don't think that because we're white, we don't go through the same thing these other young kids don't go through. And she gave me a history lesson on what's happening. Many parents have given up on their children. And it is because the parent has dropped the idealistic moral code of the divine command theory. Now, you may be saying, what in the heck is a divine command theory? It's something that has been taught in philosophy for years. Basically, the divine command theory is that it is right if God commanded it to be right, and it is wrong if God commanded it to be wrong. Now, most people today do not believe in a divine command theory because of simple subjectivism. Religionists has just put forth codes of conduct that's not connected to anything. I mean, you know, a code of conduct that, you got to marry this woman, and if this woman or this guy turns out to be mad, you can't divorce him. You got to stay married to him. Wait a minute. Even if they cause you to be miserable, yes, you have to be miserable for the rest of your life and to develop a life with that. No, I wouldn't. I'd get out of that quick. Because my divine command theory was saying what God would only put you together with someone that has your best benefit at heart. You only get together with a person that you know. Because you've sat down and discussed with that person the kind of life that person wants to have with you. And when that person makes you feel good on the inside of your body, every time you see them, you make them feel good, they make you feel good. And I'm not talking about sex. It's not about sex at all. Because sex is that natural thing that humans do. Humans hook up like dogs do and have sex. One young man told me recently, your dog is horny. Yeah, right. Because there's no other dogs around that horny dog. And that is a very human thing that you look at. But we as humans have moral principles that we have to follow. And when those moral principles have been abandoned, the parent trap set in, and then we have the result. And that result is a child going bad. Now, I'm not going to try to give you the solution to this dilemma because you know what the solution is. My time is up. I got to put together a final exam. But I thought that I'd think about that. Those of you that listen to me, why don't you take it upon yourself to make the difference in a young person's life by trying to give the correct kind of guidance, love, and understanding when the situation has turned upside down. but to protect yourselves at the same time, because the situation can turn raw. Listen, this is Pastor John in Los Angeles, just musing and around there like that. Where did I get that picture from? You just go to a website, and I typed under a Google search bad parents, and this page popped up, and I said, okay, there's the perfect picture for this webcast. Make sure you're not a bad parent. That's all I got to say. Trust in God. Try to bring them back to some godly principles, because without God, none of us will make it. I didn't say church, because church doesn't do it. Taking somebody to church and have them get before people and spill their guts on what they did is not my idea of reformation. My idea of reformation is to ask that question. What are you going to be doing in the year 2028? And if a person can't answer that question, there's a serious problem if they're an adult, because they should be thinking about that. Now, here it is. Let me go back to this and answer the question, and then I'm finished. It was in the year 1965. I was in the Army. I was in basic training. It was a Saturday. I was sitting on the side of my bed. Lloyd Fogelman was a white boy from Arkansas, was sitting on my bed next to me, and he asked me, what do you want to do? Guess what I told him? You guys want to hear it? Listen to this. He says, what do you think you're going to do in life? I was 21 years old in the Army when he asked me that question. I said, I don't know how I'm going to procure it, but I started before I got drafted into the Army, because they were fighting another war. We were sending soldiers over to Vietnam to kill the poor Vietnamese yellow people, to blow them to hell up, to get their supplies for our country, to make America strong. We've always been an imperialistic country, killing third world people to make our country work. And I said, if I survive this Vietnam thing, because I had no idea whether they were going to ship me to Vietnam to get blown up or where, I said, I'm going to be in broadcasting. I love radio broadcasting. I scored high. That's why I'm a radio teletype operator in the Army. I'll get out. I'll do radio. And from that point, I know I'm going to be helping people in some kind of way. Now, check it out. Check it out. That was in 1965. What am I doing in 2023? You get it? This is Pastor John in Los Angeles. You've been listening to The Biblical Alternative.